Welcome to another episode of Talks with T. I'm very honored to have Nikki Wilson today with us, who's the founder and CEO of Genie Recruitment. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I definitely want to talk about your management philosophies. I think a couple of stories I heard made me super excited to talk to you. Before we do that, would love to kind of hear the story of what, you know, first, what is Genie Recruitment? And then second, you know, your journey to starting the business.
Okay, perfect. So I like to say that Genie is kind of a disruptor of the recruitment world. Why I say that is because we're very informal as a company, we're female led, we're all females actually, and we work really collaboratively with a lot of our clients. So a lot of our clients might see us as a partner or even an extension of their businesses. So we work across all consumer based companies. So whether that is fashion, beauty, e-com, a lot of the delivery kitchens, and anything kind of in between. So anything that the consumer might want to spend their money on, they might be our clients basically. In terms of the business, so we started that in 2017, and you probably noticed I always say we because I always think of we as the whole company as opposed to just I.
Yeah.
So we started in 2017, we were just two people, and then we were always in co-working spaces and, you know, working out of apartments, and it was a completely bootstrap business. And then now we have two offices, 13 staff, and we work with around about 350 companies. How I got to this point, so I started recruitment in 2011 in the UK, where I actually worked for a boutique recruitment agency that only did FMCG and fashion, and that's literally all they did in terms of recruitment. And then I just realized that, you know, that was kind of the way forward. And then when I moved over to Dubai, there was really a gap in the market for something similar, because there was a lot of recruiters, but they were doing like oil and gas or finance or IT, whereas I knew that there was definitely a gap for consumer and a specialist and someone that was very passionate about it as well.
That's amazing. And I think before this show started, we were chit-chatting, Chinwag, and I was saying that this isn't the first company you had started, and you alluded to the fact that you grew up in an entrepreneurial family.
Yes, for sure. So from literally the moment that I was born, my parents had businesses. So my mom is a chef, so she had restaurants, we worked with restaurants, and my dad was just into everything, you know, whether it was taxi ranks, you know. I work with a lot of the delivery companies actually now, a lot of the chauffeur businesses. He had businesses in entertainment, he had businesses that were factories that manufactured clothes, literally hands in many pies, and I just thought that was the normal way that people operated. And I thought that all families, you know, just kind of got stuck in with working in businesses, and it's all I kind of knew. And then I went to university, but I think that I was very much of the mind that I was always going to start a company. And even when I was at university, they chose me as like one of 15 students that they saw as an entrepreneur of the future. Yeah. I don't even know what I was doing at the time. I was probably laughing. You know, they just thought that, you know, she looks like an entrepreneur. And they actually gave me quite a lot of self-employment training, which was really great because, you know, between 18 to 21, okay, I have all these great ideas, but all the great acumen, but I might not necessarily know, you know, how to do like P&L and things like that. So we did quite a lot of training around that when I was at university. And as soon as I graduated, I started my first company, which actually I imported a load of golf bags to the UK, and then I sold them. So I just cold called loads of businesses, which sounds bizarre now. Like, what was I doing? I was just keen to get stuck in. So that was my first ever venture into I guess having a business. But then I kind of realized that I probably needed to learn more about the world before actually, you know, really kind of deep dive in. So that's when I actually went and worked for another company in recruitment, because in my world, like recruitment is very entrepreneurial. You can really make your desk whatever you want. You can work with whoever you want and in your own style as well. So it was quite entrepreneurial, and it really, really suited me actually.
Nice. And then from there you went on to found Genie.
Yeah, well, so I got headhunted initially from the recruitment agency that I worked for in the UK. And then I actually moved over with a different business. And that's where I saw the gap in the market, because things were done very differently here. Yeah, and I realized that, oh, recruitment, you know, it's quite a transactional process, it seems, here.
Yeah.
And then I'm really not that way, you know. When I remember my director at the time, like, he couldn't understand why, you know, clients would call me and we'd just, like, laugh. You know, like, for the whole, like, phone conversation. Probably not talk about candidates or clients, but I'd still get the deal. And he couldn't really understand that. And then I realized that actually this is just my style of recruitment, and it really works. You know, I know that our clients enjoy working with us because we're all quite big personalities, even if we are quite different personalities in the team. So yeah, that's kind of where Genie was born. It was always going to be a disruptor in recruitment, and it was always going to be a very informal, fun, creative kind of environment where I really try and make sure that the people, you know, the team, sorry, are working, you know, on their own passions, and then they're actually really kind of working to their own strengths as well. So the consultant Emily, who works on food and beverage, she's a real foodie. You know, she's very, very passionate about restaurants, about food, etc. I don't think that, you know, I couldn't really push her onto, like, beauty or, you know, four-star, five-star, like, luxury resorts or something. I think she's more of the restaurant side of things,
And what did you learn about entrepreneurship or starting businesses from watching your parents do it?
I think that it was always kind of ingrained in me. So it's really hard to say what I learned, because it's all I knew. You know, I just knew that, you know, you'd wake up on the weekend, and like, I had my job. So at 8, 9 years old, I'd clean the pub that we lived above. You know, my dad owned a pub at the time, and my job was to clean it. And I didn't expect money or anything. It was just, or pocket money. That was just my job. You know, I learned to cook very early because my mum is a chef. So I was always helping, you know, prepare food in the restaurant, in the back end anyway, washing pots, like, when he had an arcade, I used to work in the change booths. I was extremely good at maths, you know, when, at school, and they could never understand, and I'm like, well, you know, he used to do my work in the summers in the change booths, and then you just kind of learn things on the job, right?
And what kind of mistakes did you see them make that really stuck out with you as you grew up? And, you know, you said, I'm not going to approach business in that manner.
No, that's a good question, actually, because my parents are really good at business, but they're not necessarily the greatest in terms of generating lots of money, if that makes sense. So they always had great businesses. They always had lots of different businesses. Were they great at saving? Probably not. So I really kind of learned that bit, I think. I definitely learned to take risks, though, because they were always involved with so many different things. And it was like a continuous cycle, I guess, that I was always keen, like, oh, what's the next opportunity? What's the next opportunity? And I really do bring that into recruitment. You know, that's why I always take on loads of interns. A lot of people say, well, you know, why do you take on interns? Like, and I'm like, I'm learning from them, believe me, because, you know, they're teaching me, like, the new trends. They're teaching me even new platforms to work with. Yes, I'm quite keen on always bringing in new ideas and taking on new risks as well.
And you know, you mentioned the golf startup. What did you learn from that experience, that about doing your own startup and about starting a business?
So in terms of starting a business, I think that I learned, really, you can bootstrap a business. You can really hustle. You can really do things not as expensive, or you don't need a lot of money. You know, all I needed was my laptop, my trade license, and my phone. And then I was already generating some clients. Now, I think a lot of the startup scene, you know, and you always hear about it in the news, that you need tons of money and millions of dollars and all this kind of stuff. And honestly, not really. Like, if you want to start a business, if you've got hustle and you've got grit, I think that's all you really need to get off the ground. Then maybe think about those things later. You know, I see a lot of startups or a lot of companies just starting out, and they're just saying, you know, where do you find investors? And I'm like, well, have you tried the alternative of actually maybe not having, you know, any investment and just seeing what you can do initially? So that's I know my business model is very different to a lot of companies, especially in the startup world. Mm. I took a lot of risk. You know, I really went for it. It was completely bootstrapped, but everything was reinvested, you know, and literally taken from zero to, you know, like multi-million dollar company now. Yeah. So, you know, it's really been a process of organic growth.
Yeah. It's funny because I get to interact with a lot of entrepreneurs who are thinking about ideas. And like you said, it's sometimes I have conversations with them about fundraising before we talk about the business. And I mean, I'm part of a startup that's raised quite a bit of capital. And I think one of the things I've learned is, you know, in startup number two or three down the line, how do we, you know, potentially be more efficient with capital, have that hustler's attitude. And we've done that at different stages, stages of the business. So, I've come to a very similar conclusion to yourself, but maybe having gone, having gone through the experience.
And even my side, I've done it the other way around. So, so now we work with Beehive, you know, they do the invoice financing for us. We're doing a little fundraise at the moment, but even though it's like a loan, because, you know, that kind of bridges the gap of cash flow. Because as you get bigger and, you know, we're a service provider, we only get paid once the candidate starts. And then within that, you know, there's X amount of days. So there's always a bit of a bridge. Of cash flow. So I've gone the other way now. I need to do things like that as opposed to before.
And I think the whether you raise capital or not, the critical point isn't the capital itself. It's, you know, I read something that said people with a lot of money make expensive mistakes, right? And so learning how to make those mistakes in a cheap way early on before you've raised funding is kind of, I think, the message here.
Definitely. I think, there's no right or wrong way of doing things. But I think that my way, I know that has been quite different when I've spoken to a lot of startups, for sure.
Yeah, I salute you on that. It's definitely requires a lot of hustle. The word risk has come up a few times. How do you think about risk? What's your relationship with risk?
I think that risk, I guess I always think of it really in regards to, well, how much is that going to cost? You know, it kind of, I factor that in, you know, how can I make sure that enough cash flow is going to come in to be able to maybe cover another staff member? And I'm not averse to taking on multiple people at the same time. I remember we went through an interview process where there was three potentials for Genie at the time, and none of us could decide between all three, so we just went, right, we'll just hire them all. And then I know at the time I was thinking, oh wow,
you know, oh shit, how am I gonna pay for this?
You know, what am I going to do in this kind of scenario? So all I did in that moment was literally I just got to work, you know. I got to doing some more recruitment projects myself, and I can always pull that, you know, in back into the bag, if that makes sense. So I probably do less of the recruitment now. I'm always in behind the scenes. I always say that I'm like Genie's best resource, because what people don't realize is I'm working across all the jobs all the time. Even when a few people have wanted to speak directly to me and I might take the brief or I might take the brief with the girls, I'm definitely working on the jobs. It's just that I couldn't manage 350 clients. There's just no way.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, even though it might be the name, but, you know, everyone is trained the same way as me, and we're all headhunters. We don't use necessarily job boards. We don't advertise anywhere. We don't do any paid adverts. It's all through referrals, headhunting, like executive search, just for a boutique price. That's the best way to describe it.
That's amazing. And what sticks out as risks that you took, or a risk that you took, and it really sticks out in your mind that this decision could have gone either way?
Okay. So I think one of the biggest risks I ever did was probably during the COVID times, you know, around lockdown. So all I heard were people were making everyone redundant or reducing salaries or, you know, really kind of go in that way. Yeah. And I just sat there one day and I was like, I'm going to make a decision and I'm not going to do any of that. I'm going to pay them all. I'm going to pay them all commission. I'm not going to make anyone redundant. And I'm just going to take it on my own head. And I won't take a salary. So I didn't take a salary for 10 months. I made sure that my team were happy and, you know, always like fulfilled, or, you know, and I kept checking in. How's your mental health? Like, what's going on? You know, what are you thinking? They were fine. I think that, you know, that there was a real grey cloud in that time there. Yeah. Where, you know, their friends were talking and we were a small business. How were we going to constantly like maintain that kind of level of productivity? And okay, we definitely didn't do as much work, but we were able to really help people. So I opened all the girls' diaries. We were on Calendly, and we just put lots of different time slots, and we just opened it up to anyone that wanted to speak to us that had been made redundant. So I think in a period of like 3 weeks, like we spoke to 500 people that had been made redundant. So we went the real other way. And a lot of like recruitment agency bosses, usually, so you know, in recruitment, we're very it's a very competitive market, and you don't really speak to other recruiters, or you know, there's a lot of rivalry in recruitment. All of a sudden I was getting calls every day like, how are you still, you know, active, how are you still paying your staff, like I've heard you've not reduced anyone's salaries, like how are you doing this? And it was just purely because I remained very positive. Like I do believe that if you continuously are quite like positive, and you know, you always have like a lot of optimism, then you will definitely attract more of it, you know. Like I'm very like that, you know. Like a magnet for abundance and all this kind of stuff. I believe in it. And I just believed, okay, if I just can continue making sure that the team are very happy, like are they happy? Are they content? Are they busy? Then they'll be okay. And the business will be okay. Mm. And then when September kind of hit and everyone started to get, you know, started to slowly come back, our business was still functioning at 100%. We still had staff ready to go. Yeah. So all of a sudden we just blew up. That was the real making of us.
Amazing.
And at that point I was able to get an office. So we didn't have an office at this point. We were in co-working spaces, which we loved. Yeah. But I think that we realized we've got to the point now where we could generate enough money to be able to cover that cost as well. Mm. And then that's when I had to hire more people. Imagine, straight after COVID, I had to hire more people, get an office. It was a real quick change. Mm. But it was probably the best thing that I did, even though it was quite risky. You know, I could have lost the business. Yeah. Like I could have not been able to pay anyone. I don't know.
And I love the message here, which is really sometimes you just have to go opposite of the crowd. And, you know, have that intuition of what works, you know, for my business and what works for my profile.
Yeah, I really go off my gut quite a lot. Mm. Not necessarily always what everyone tells me to do, because I speak to a lot of people, like people that I see as mentors, and honestly 99% of them said make someone redundant, or you know, reduce salaries. Actually, if someone said make three of them redundant, and I just said no, I'm not gonna do that. So, and you know, it's quite hard, because how do you get through that noise of you know, this is the right thing to do? And I was like, well, this is my right thing to do, and I'm just going to do it. And it worked.
Talk to me about you mentioned kind of abundance, positivity, to a certain extent, manifesting positivity. I'd love to get a better understanding of your philosophies, how you think about it.
Okay, so I'm a Buddhist. So my mum's from Thailand. I grew up in a Buddhist family, really. Well, my mum's side anyway.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're very into, like, positive thinking and, you know, like you know, like you literally, whatever you give out to the world, you'll get it back round in some kind of way. And I think that I grew up like that. So not only did I have the business side, I had this very optimistic side. Yeah, so if you blend them together, it kind of works really well. And I'm quite a spiritual person anyway.
Yeah.
I do a lot of like things like Kundalini yoga, meditate every single day. Like I don't have this noise or this chatter. You know, I've read a few books where it says that, you know, a lot of people in business have this chatter that goes, mine's like zero, there's nothing up there.
You're lucky. That's a very good place to be.
And I think that that's where meditation has come in, and it's helped me be creative in my own way, because there isn't a noise for me. There is just like, okay, this is my funny random creative way of doing things, let's just go with that.
And you seem like you have a lot of conviction and confidence when you make a decision.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think that when I make a decision, I never really doubt it either. Mm. You know, and I sleep well at night, honestly. Yeah, every night.
I'm just, everything you're saying, I'm jealous. Everything you're saying, all of the above.
Yeah, no, I'm very into. Well, does that come with maybe being a spiritual person? Probably, you know, I really believe that something, well, someone, something like, is there supporting and guiding me, and because I'm a good person, you know, it is meant to be for me. It's meant to be successful. I'm meant to get what I want, or you know, if someone is supporting me on the right path, I believe that for sure.
Amazing, amazing. Yeah, I mean, I'm a huge believer of karma, dharma, yeah. And I guess sometimes I find during tough times I start doubting, you know, that am I being too idealistic, right? I'm a good person, I treat others well, I have good intentions, you know, even kind of my mission, my purpose in life is to help empower people to reach their full potential. So even my own mission is about, you know, providing something that's useful to the universe. But even then, sometimes during tough times, I start questioning myself, like, what if I just have convinced myself that good will happen to me and maybe it's not going to happen? I don't know if you ever face mental battles like that. And if you do, you know, how do you actually zero out those negative thoughts?
I think that, you know, there was probably a scenario last year where I had someone that joined us and she didn't pass probation. And I did have a mental battle there because, you know, you try and be a very positive person, you look for the good in everything, but sometimes things just don't work. And I think that I learned a lot from that specific scenario. But in the end, I think that, you know, I had a very open and honest conversation with her, and you know, she kind of agreed with me, and it wasn't a harsh thing. We're still in touch, you know. Like, I know that she would still come to our events, and I think that there are ways to do things in a very kind, approachable way that, okay, maybe things don't work out, but it doesn't mean that, you know, you have to completely cut ties, because maybe your paths will cross again. you never know.
Yeah. I think especially with us, you know, having people leave the company, my approach has changed with time.
Okay.
I think initially it was very binary, that it's a tough conversation. The person who's going to leave is going to hate you. And so might as well just be a dick about it, you know, for the lack of a better word. And then with time, it's changed to, Actually, the right way for someone to leave is that they should not be surprised. There'll always be that element of surprised, but if someone says, "Oh, I saw it coming," then I think I've done my job, because that means I've given them feedback. That means I've tried to coach them to get them out of that outcome. And, you know, even in some cases, people have come to me and said, "Hey, listen, I don't think I'm the right person for the role, just based on the feedback, and I'm not turning around the corner." And sometimes, you know, I think we're so strict with our interview process that I think whoever comes through is just genuinely a good person, intelligent, but sometimes things just don't click, right? And doesn't mean that they're wrong or we're wrong. It just sometimes in the universe, things don't click.
It happens every now and then, and that's okay. So I think I learned that last year, because, you know, being like the person that I am, I did have a bit of a struggle around it. But then, you know, I soon knocked myself out of that.
And so when you started the company, what were some of the tenets or some of the philosophies or principles you set out to say, you know, this is how we're going to run the business? You mentioned that you always wanted it to be a disruptive entity in the context of it being casual, female-led. What were some of the things you put in place to try to drive drive those principles? Okay.
So as a business, we're very, very transparent. Could I get my words out? Very honest. I think because we partner with businesses, we really try to understand them and the personality as well. So we will often try and influence, not on like the basis of being a pushy recruiter, on the basis of the fact that we're meant to be the experts, and we also know the company very well, especially if we've worked with them for a while. And then with that, I know that a lot of people have had excellent hires where they thought initially actually that wasn't the right person on paper for them. And they were like, you know, trust us. So I think that our idea is actually that we do partner and literally really understand a business to the point where, you know, you just give us two lines and we'll be like, okay, we're off, you know, when we already know where to look for those people. Because, you know, recruitment, I think it's a very complicated industry, let's just say that. And it really is a mix of skills, obviously experience, personality is such a big one, you know, and bringing people from different kind of environments as well. Like, and I think that years and years of understanding what works, that's where really what you're paying the recruitment fee for, you know, for us, that's what you're really paying for, our understanding of who actually can help that business grow. It's not just a fill a gap. You know, and we have worked with a lot of companies like that have really grown in this region. And I do believe like that's down to the people. That must be down to the people.
Fair. So in the end, do you think of yourself as like you said, an extension of their their team, and you're driving to get the business to grow 100%. Through the people you're bringing into the business?
Yeah, definitely. And we'll pull out candidates all the time based on attitude, behavior. Maybe someone is ghosting us, or maybe you know, things happen, and actually the client may never know about that because we do the right thing. It's not about money for us, it's about the right person. And I think like we don't have KPIs or anything, which again is very strange in a sales environment. We don't have KPIs for the sales team, for the business development, for any of the account managers. They never look at the figures, they never look at the numbers, and because of that they can make the right choice, they can make the right decisions, they're, you know, equipped to be able to do these things like pull someone out of a process or just say, I don't want to work with that client anymore, the you know, the way that they speak to us, and that's okay. You know, it doesn't even matter who they are, like you know, we're very much, we've got strong morals, you know, we want to work with the right candidates, the right clients, and make sure that there's a, you know, a really great partnership, you know, that kind of evolves from that as well.
Salespeople without KPIs, I'm sure I'm not the first person to say, you know, how does that work?
How does that work? Yeah, no, I think that when you create an environment where your team are very happy, you know, they're able to make their own choices, they're trusted, you know, they know that any of their ideas or creativity, it will be heard, you know. I'm super flexible, we're very flexible as a business, and I think that they're just so happy that they then respect the business and they respect me as well, you know, and then they want to work really hard, and that's how it kind of works. And you know, it's not failed me yet, so
so the idea is that and I guess, does the team know how the business is doing, performing, you know, what you said, transparent?
They see it. And there'll always be an element of competitiveness because we're salespeople at the end of the day. So maybe that's also a driver. But what really, so we don't have KPIs individually, but what we do have is more around like fun incentives. So at the moment, obviously, it's Ramadan. So, you know, everyone still has a big kid inside them.
Yeah.
So we do quite a lot of creative incentives. So at the moment we have this thing where it's a Ramadan advent calendar.
Okay.
We have it every Ramadan, we have it every Christmas. So we have it twice a year. Yeah. They scream about it. They're so excited that it runs for the whole month. And basically, if they get a placement, new client, they do like 5 e-shots, or there's loads of different ways to win. Basically, they get to pick a number and then they get to open one of the boxes that is with the number. And honestly, it could be like personal care products. One of them was a concert ticket, it's like Lewis Capaldi. It could be an annual leave day, the duvet days, which everyone is absolutely crazy about, you know. They all come running to see what everyone gets. You know, when that's the kind of KPIs, that's the kind of motivators that I put into place, which I know I put it all over my Instagram, and people, they message me all the time that this is hilarious. You know, even last week we had an Easter egg hunt, like you know, most of my team are probably, well, they range, you know, in terms of ages, from our youngest intern is 16 right up to maybe people in their 40s, right? And everyone loves the Easter egg hunt, and they just start screaming, go wild, you know, and just always making sure that there's something ongoing to keep everyone engaged. And I guess that's where we always have an annual holiday as well. That's based on performance. So, and everyone goes. So the whole team goes. It's not just based on, you know, I've seen it before in recruitment agencies where the top three will go. You know? And I'm like, well, what about the resourcer that helped you get to, you know, those kind of figures? So I take the whole team, you know, when we all go, and it'll really depend on the revenue of where we'll go. You know, it could be if we were having a really bad bad season, let's say, it might just be to Rack or something. Yeah. But, you know, we've been to the Maldives, we've been to Phuket, we went to Kenya this year. We don't know yet. Like, it's still up for grabs.
Yeah. So do you at the beginning of the year say, depending on where we are, these are the locations we could go to, depending on how much revenue we close?
Because I have 6 or 7 different nationalities that work, you know, and the visa situation is always a little bit complicated, and especially the past couple of years with COVID as well, that made things really difficult. One year it was Maldives was the choice, and that was the only place we could
that's
go.
The only place you could because of COVID.
That's the one that we picked. And luckily, you know, prices were a little bit down at that point. So this year I think there'll be more. I did a little leaflet, and we had lots of different options on there. And this year as well, at the beginning of the year, so we do this goal setting. I know that a lot of companies do goal setting, but again, probably quite childlike. We get lots of magazines and scrap paper and stickers, and everyone does a book full of like their goals for the year, basically. So personal goals, it could be wellness goals, home goals, and financial goals as well. And then we'll all speak about it, you know, to keep each other accountable. And that's really good, because people will, you know, achieve maybe one of those goals, or maybe they're working with one of their target companies that they've put in the book, and then, you know, they're screaming about it again and like showing everyone this book, you know, where it's kind of like a scrapbook of you know, their goals for the year. So it's really good, because, you know, I believe that if you write it down, but especially if it's visual, like it remains somewhere in here in the subconscious of your mind, you know, to be able to actually achieve. That's why vision boards and things like that are so popular these days. They actually do work, you know. So but at the beginning of the year, sorry, I was going off a tangent then.
No, you're good.
Yeah, a lot of the girls said that they wanted to do something charitable. So we've done a little bit. Like last year, when we went to Kenya, I took them to an orphanage because many people had never been to one. So, you know, we got lots of clothes ready and toys, etc., and everyone went to the orphanage, and I think that it opened everyone's eyes. Actually, we can do these things as well as, you know, the other things that we might do on holiday. And then one of our clients randomly he'd actually opened an orphanage in Mozambique. So I said, right guys, who would want to do the volunteering to this orphanage? And everyone wanted to go. So I factored that into this year's as well. So as soon as they're ready to take volunteers, we will go, because they've already achieved that target. It's just we don't know when. And then so the other holiday that we're doing at the moment is more for like a shorter period, like 3 days or something, maybe even like a retreat or a wellness thing. So
that's amazing. That's amazing. And I guess in terms of the ideas, so, you know, one of the challenges I have on the sales side is, how do you keep things fresh? How do you keep coming up with ideas? How do you, it's like a job on its own. So how do you find inspiration? How do you approach these kinds of fun approaches?
Yeah. So I think, you know, years ago, I used to think that I was a very business person.
Yeah.
Actually, I realized I'm a very creative person. I think I'm a very, very creative person. But a lot of the ideas come from them, because, you know, I always have like performance reviews every year or every 6 months or something. And then I will just ask them, like, you know, what would you like to see more of? I always take note of their goals every year. So, you know, like people might say, or the girls might say that they're looking to buy a new phone or something. So I'll make a note. I'm like, okay, Zoe wants new phone. You know, and I'll just like every now and then I might put some gadgets in, or maybe vouchers. Some people have said that they would prefer like bonuses, like I think a couple of years ago, and I've never done any, you know, like cash bonuses. Obviously we have commission, so that is cash in itself, but, you know, just like random cash bonuses every now and then. So we did a few things like that. sometimes it's just things like perfume, but honestly, everyone gets excited to get something or some kind of recognition, and it can be little, it can be big, it could be masterclasses. So we do a training every single Wednesday, and sometimes it's very recruitment driven, of course, because we do recruitment at the end of the day. It's not just a circus, even though sometimes it might appear to be so. But, you know, we'll bring in different types of training. So I was at Seva. You know Seva? It's like a wellness. The
meditation.
Yeah, meditation. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I go there every week.
Okay, nice.
And I saw these collaboration cards after my meditation. I was like, oh, that might be quite good for training. So the girls then use that. And then that brings in some kind of different element of training, you know, more of collaborative, like, kind of approaches. You get given scenarios. And I think bringing in things that are not just work related or industry specific. It could just be like we had to do this thing where we were all in a circle and we had to say the alphabet, and it had to be at random, so it couldn't go around, you know, like A, B, C, D. It had to go like A, B, C. And if you both said it at the same time, like, we had to start again. We never got to Z, but everyone was crying laughing for like 15 minutes. So it's just about things like that, you know, about team bonding. If your team are bonded, you know, like a family, then they will support each other, and that can make your business grow, I believe it. Because my team, you know, they are various nationalities, various ages, various personalities. Some are quiet, some are loud, or like really loud, you know, and they really work really well together. There's no drama, no toxic behavior, even though we're all female.
And I guess, have you thought about how you nurture that at scale? Like, how do you know, today you said you're 11, I think you said 11 team 13, members, 13 team members. So do you think about, you know, once you get to 20, how do you keep that going? You know, if you get to 30, how do you keep that going? Does that, do those thoughts kind of go through your mind?
Yeah. I think that when I started doing it, I always thought that it was going to be a huge company. And that was the intention. Let's grow it to, you know, hundreds of people. And then I've just realized, well, actually, you know, you can grow a business that creates you like joy, you know. Are you content with the business? I'm very content. Like, I love going to work every single day. I'm very much part of the business. I enjoy what I do. Do I think that it's going to be a huge business of, like, I don't know, 50, 100 people? Probably not. It probably will just be a business, maybe 20, maybe 30, you never know. But the main objective is to keep it like this. I want to keep the culture strong.
Got it.
Right? And then the quality is strong. And actually, we can still cater to so many clients, you know, with the amount of people that we have. Because it's a bit like cyclical, isn't it? You know, some people, some clients will come constantly. Maybe you have a period of where it's tons of restaurant clients will come, and then the next month actually you don't get any restaurant clients, but it's a ton of fashion. So you know, it's a bit, it comes like this anyway. So I think that for me, the most important thing is to really nurture the culture, because I could definitely take on 10 more people now, like, with the amount of work that we have. But do I do it? No. Because actually I'm not that greedy. I just want to continue creating this culture, a dynamic team, a happy team. You know, and I know so many messages that I get every day. I wish I could work for you. Like, I had a girl come for an interview like last week, and, you know, she, not recruitment or anything, she's come from an events background, and she's like, I'm not interviewing anywhere. I only want to work here. I want to work for Genie. You know, because they see about the culture and what we do, and that we actually care. Like, I genuinely care about every single person in that room, you know, and they know that they can come to me, like, with their personal things, or maybe I'll have a different way of thinking. You know, I'll always have a different way of thinking. You know, sometimes, like, if people come and they say, you know, that they're kind of suffering at the moment, like, you know, have you checked your hormones? Or, you know, could you maybe consider doing meditation? You know, like, things like this. Like, we always look in a different direction, as opposed to there's not one size fits all with everyone. And I think that being quite adaptable as a leader, then that then comes down to the managers, you know. So now I hear, you know, the managers in the company then also ask the same kind of questions, and then you think, okay, so I'm definitely building the right kind of culture with definitely the right kind of mindset, and hopefully that keeps filtering, and then as you know, that keeps filtering, hopefully then you can grow from there.
100%. I mean, I've heard you say a couple of things today and as part of the discussion, so you know, I heard you say that you can hustle as a bootstrap startup and all you really need is hustle and grit. I heard you say to a certain extent, sometimes you have to go opposite of the crowd and trust your gut. I like this whole idea of being creative with incentives, especially in the context of salespeople, but more generally. Mm. There was something you didn't explicitly say, but I kind of picked up from the way your culture is built, which is nurture the kid mm-hmm. inside of everyone, and, mm-hmm. and everyone has a kid inside of them. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things you've given me to think about mm-hmm. in terms of how we run our teams and how we run the company. So for me, it was personally insightful. And I love your energy, mm-hmm. Your positivity. So I really wanted to say thanks a ton for teaching me a lot today.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad. Hopefully you can implement some of the things with your team. I'll be watching.
Thanks a ton, Nikki.
No worries. Thank you.